welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, the Executive Director of the Delaware Coalition Against Domestic Violence, Sue Ryan. Sue, hello there.
Hi, Laura. So happy to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. It's a terrible, terrible topic, but it's great to talk about it, actually, isn't it?
It's incredibly important to talk about it because it's a topic that's so misunderstood.
There's stigma attached to it as well.
There is stigma attached to it, which is really sad because so many families are actually experiencing domestic violence and intimate partner violence. And so talking about it hopefully will address some of those stigmas.
Well, let's first discuss the Delaware Coalition. Who and what are you?
The Delaware Coalition Against Domestic Violence is a nonprofit organization in Delaware, and it is, as its name suggests, a coalition of member programs, and all of us together are working to end and prevent domestic violence. And the way that the coalition does this work is through training and outreach and raising awareness. And also prevention work, really looking at the core reasons for domestic violence and trying to address that before it even begins. And then also a lot of advocacy and policy work, looking at legislation that's coming out of Legge Hall, but also just looking at how are we as a state protecting the rights and the safety of victims of domestic violence.
When you talk about this being a coalition, are these direct service providers, shelters, et cetera, or does this include law enforcement or hospitals, healthcare professionals?
The member programs are direct service providers, other not-for-profits in the state. And we have five of those. We have Child Inc. and the Community Legal Aid Society, the Delaware Center for Justice, People's Place, and also the YWCA of Delaware.
Great organizations. In fact, they've all been on this show at some point or another, too. Let's talk then. Let's go back to discussing what actually is domestic violence. And when I said stigma, we don't talk about it. So sometimes we don't really know what it is.
So domestic violence is, as many people would imagine, a form of violence where one partner in relation to another partner is harming them. And when we talk about domestic violence or intimate partner violence, we often think of physical violence. And certainly it is that. And it can show itself in physical injury. Sometimes the injuries are hidden. But in addition to the physical violence, it can also involve emotional violence, name calling, a psychological violence, and a lot of financial violence as well. And it can also involve sexual violence.
It's all about control, isn't it?
It is all about control. It's a coercive control. It's engaging in these tactics, these various tactics, to have the victim, your partner, do what you want them to do.
And this is not confined to legal relationships either. It's boyfriend, girlfriend, boyfriend, boyfriend, girlfriend, girlfriend, teens in dating. Aren't they susceptible too, especially susceptible?
I think that they are very much susceptible. I think that there are lots of messages that young people are receiving about what makes up a relationship, but some of those messages are not healthy relationships. And so this type of coercive control can start at a young age. And I'm so glad that you noted, Laura, that it's not just heterosexual. It can also happen within the LGBTQ community as well.
Is there any population that is less likely or doesn't experience this?
No. Honestly, no. I mean, it truly impacts across all races, all ages, all religions, all types of relationships. I think that the impact, though, of the violence is so much greater on individuals who are already struggling with other types of challenges. So people who are economically or in a state of poverty, if they are also experiencing violence in the home, then the impact is even greater.
Oh, you know what? That's true. And I was about to say, hey, it doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor. This happens in any household.
Yes. I mean, if you have more resources and this is happening, then you have more resources, maybe friends or families where you can turn to. But if you're isolated, if you're poor, and you're really dependent on this abuser, then you can be especially trapped in that relationship.
Obviously, anybody knows that you take a swing at somebody. That's physical abuse right there. But talk about emotional abuse. Talk about psychological and financial. How does that actually present itself?
So the emotional abuse, and a lot of this, it's never just one type of abuse that's happening in the relationship. It can be actually a whole array of tactics. But the emotional abuse is really just putting someone down. You can never do anything right. It's a lot of name calling. And what that's getting to is the person's sense of self, their sense of confidence. After a while, it can really put them in a place where they feel like, I can't do anything right. This relationship and all that's wrong with it is my fault. And so they get afraid. They get afraid and then dependent on the abuser. Psychological is very, very similar, where you're putting the person down, you're saying you're crazy, you know, you feel this way and that's your fault. And again, the victim of this constant barrage of psychological name calling and put downs gets into a spot where they feel really isolated. They lose their sense of security and self, and then can become psychologically dependent on this abuser. But you made a really good point about the financial abuse. The number one reason that people stay in these relationships or return is because they are financially trapped. And they can become financially trapped because the abuser is ruining their credit, not letting them get work, or they get work and then the abuser is showing up and they get fired from their job. Or they have a job, but it's minimum wage and it's really hard to just make it out on your own. And so they are financially trapped inside that relationship. And what can also complicate it is when you have children together. So now you have children together and you're thinking, if I leave, how will I make it with myself and my kids? I can't financially make it on my own. I need this partner to help me. And so they feel trapped in an abusive relationship.
And an awful lot of time, the children aren't quite aware of the issue and might actually want to stay with the abusive parent.
It can really vary. Sometimes children, they know exactly what's going on, but kids are resilient and they want things to be quote unquote normal. They want to feel like everything will be okay. And so sometimes kids can blame the victim because they're thinking, if it was just all okay, and they're afraid. They're afraid to blame the abuser in the relationship. Sometimes kids, depending on their age, don't know what's going on, but many times they can know what's going on.
When children are witnessing this, is this one of those where it will perpetuate itself into the next generation?
You know, it can, but it doesn't always. I know that for many abusers, the reason that they're abusing is because they were raised in a family where that was what was going on. That was what they saw as normal. But there are children who do see this and do not perpetuate it in when they become adults. I think with regards to children, it's really difficult because for many, many victims of domestic violence, that's the second big reason that they stay in the relationship. They are staying because they're afraid they'll lose custody. They're afraid if I leave, then he's going to take the children. And that's one of the threats. That's one of the psychological threats. If you leave, I'm going to get the kids. I have more money than you. I have more security than you. I'm going to tell the court that you're crazy. I'm going to get the kids. And after all the emotional and physical and psychological abuse, this person who's so big and large in your life, who has said all this stuff to you, it seems like that might be true. And so the victim is afraid to leave. They're afraid, what will happen to these kids? I don't want him to get the kids. He's going to be able to afford an attorney, or she's going to be able to afford an attorney. How do I secure these kids and myself? And so it's so important for a victim of domestic violence to connect to a resource in the community. Because one of the challenges with intimate partner violence is that you're isolated. The abuser has often isolated you from family and friends. And so the best type of support that you can get is someone out in the community, like a domestic violence advocate, who can help talk about safety and custody and short-term and long-term planning.
I mentioned earlier, and you said, yeah, I finally got it. That it was about dominance, but it's really about, or control, but it's also about dependence and making the victim dependent on them for respect and for affection and for any kind of identity. They control it.
And that is part of the course of control, that psychological wearing down of another person's really sense of self so that they feel completely trapped in that relationship.
How do you recognize this as it's developing? Are there warning signs? And you know, we didn't really talk about teens either. And that's, you know, what looks like, oh, he's really into me, is he's starting to be controlling. Or she wants to spend all of her time with me, she's becoming domineering and cutting you off.
Yes, so let's talk about teens. You know, you made a great point there. Sometimes the teens will say, well, he's really, really into me. He wants to know where I'm at all the time, and he's super jealous because he really, really loves me. But that jealousy, that excessive jealousy, is actually a red flag. And it can show itself with, hey, who were you with today? I'm frustrated that you're not returning my text right away. I'm frustrated that you're spending time with your friends. You should be spending time with me. Who is this person you hanged out with after school? You know, that wanting to own all of their time and all of their attention can be misunderstood for young people who might be entering a relationship for the first time as, well, this person's into me and they love me. But that's too much. It doesn't feel right. It you know, it's a little skewed to a lot of control and a lot of wanting to own who you're with and what you're doing. That's a red flag that this is really not a healthy relationship.
But then that happens to adults as well, and you end up married.
It can happen to adults, absolutely. I mean, people don't have big A's on their forehead for abuser. I mean, it can start out as extremely romantic. It can start out as showing a lot of love. And then, you know, once the person is connected, you know, it might start out with some name calling, some psychological games, some saying, no, you don't need to have that job. Give up your job. Just stay at home. Or it might start out one day with a punch, a hit, a smack. It doesn't always necessarily escalate. Sometimes it is immediately violent. And if this happens to you and you're in a relationship, it is a complete shock to your system. This is somebody that you love who is now physically harming you or calling you these terrible names. It's really hard in the beginning to even make sense of this violence because this is somebody that you love and you're in a relationship with. And that's part of really trying to get a hold of, I have to talk to someone else around this. I have to talk to someone else. And sometimes people will reach out to friends or family and they'll say, this is what's going on. And the friends and family might have a quick response, well, just dump them or just leave them. But that isn't always helpful advice. And then sometimes people, victims, will feel like, I don't want to say anything because I'm embarrassed. I can't believe I'm caught up in this situation. I don't want to say anything else because I don't want to hear the advice from other people because I'm not ready to really hear that advice.
And you know, that what you mentioned, you know, the getting punched and all that. And it's also the fear of setting that person off.
Yes, that is exactly right. I mean, I have, prior to working at the Coalition, I used to be a domestic violence attorney in my younger years, and heard many stories where women would say, you know, I know that he's reading my text when I get home at night, and he calls me at work during the day, and he really interrupts me at work, but I know if I don't take the call when I get home at night, there's going to be even more retribution. I had one client, this was years ago, and it was in another state, where she said, he hauled off and hit me. I was flat out on the floor, and he was standing over top of me saying, I didn't do that. So there was a strange denial. And so she said, in that moment, I actually just didn't know what to do. I was so terrified to even move from the floor. And so the stories can run the gamut of a lot of emotional, psychological abuse, all the way to physical and sexual violence. There can be a lot of reproductive controlling behaviors, like, I want you to get pregnant because I know if you're pregnant, you're stuck with me. We're going to be in a relationship. Or I don't want you to get pregnant. A lot of reproductive coercive control can happen as well.
Before we go any further, I got to say that this is Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis. Today we are talking to the Executive Director of the Delaware Coalition Against Domestic Violence, Sue Ryan. If you'd like more information about what we are talking about right now, they do have a great website, dcadv.org, and that is for Delaware Coalition Against Domestic Violence, dcadv.org. You'll find out information about how you can get involved, information about what to do if you are in a situation where a friend or family, you get information there. Let's just go there. Let's say that. There are hotlines also available. Obviously, if you are in an emergency, 911 is your best bet. And we're going to talk about your peer training and your peer programming. But call for help if you do need that. Otherwise, if you want advice or you just want to chat, 24 hours, you can call in Newcastle County, 302-762-6110. Or in Kent, Sussex Counties, 302-422-8058. And for Spanish speakers, if you do want to advise someone, 302-745-9874. And we'll post these numbers. But now language is another barrier, isn't it?
Yes, it is a barrier. Yes. And all of these barriers and these tactics of control, coercive control, one of the things that happens is people get isolated. And so I think a key message that I would want to share today is you're not alone. If you are experiencing intimate partner violence or you know someone who is, a key message is you are not alone. There are absolutely resources available for you. You know, the hotlines that you shared are a phenomenal resource. People can call in. They can say, this is what's going on. I need some help. And in Newcastle County, you can talk directly to somebody, a community health worker, who can meet you where you're at your work or in a safe location, just face-to-face to talk through what's happening. But the key message is you are not alone. There is help available.
You know, you just reminded me, when you visit a doctor's office, you will find pamphlets sitting out. And the willingness to meet somewhere in a safe spot, one, it's the safety and the comfort, and it's no pressure in these locations, and it's also private. But that's part of your big programming and the peer training that you do and the peer programming that you offer. You work with law enforcement and emergency rooms, et cetera. Jump in here.
We do. You know, we do a lot of training with law enforcement, and we offer techniques to be trauma-informed as people are responding to victims. But for many, many victims of domestic violence, the very first responder will not be law enforcement. It will actually be their medical provider while they're visiting their doctor, while they're meeting with a practicing nurse. They will reveal or they'll be asked about whether or not they're safe. Our program that we're working in collaboration with Christiana Care, Child Inc., and Westside Family Health is a two-part approach. One, we provide training to the medical provider so that they can screen for domestic violence in a safe way. Right now, if you go to the doctor, typically the doctor or the nurse will say, are you safe? Sometimes, though, we've heard that, you know, the abuser is standing right behind the victim when that question is asked, and that's not a good thing. And so we want to make sure that the way that the question is asked is actually an inviting response. And so the technique that we are encouraging is something called CUES, C for confidentiality, and UE for universal education, and S for support. And the idea is to let the person know what you're sharing will be kept confidential, but to engage in a conversation around, you know, what is a healthy relationship and how, if you're in a stressful, unhealthy relationship, that can impact your health. These conversations can then encourage people to say, you know, things are not going well at home. And it helps people also to think beyond just the physical violence, but if it is unhealthy at home, then it's unhealthy for your body. So the doctor nurse identifies, okay, this patient actually is experiencing domestic violence. In Newcastle County right now, they can connect them with a domestic violence community health advocate who will meet with the patient in a safe, secure, confidential location to talk about safety, to talk about what is going on in your home that's making you unsafe, and what can we do to help you feel safe.
Are there prompts that they use to get someone to recognize that they are in an abusive situation? Because that part about universal education there, I'm thinking, if you are conditioned to think that it is your fault, or that, oh, this is a normal relationship, I don't know any better, maybe I came from a household that had abuse in it, you know, and that's all I ever saw. Does everyone recognize that they are not safe or that they are in this kind of a situation?
I think that's the reason that we do want to engage in those kinds of conversations where we move beyond, do you feel safe? Because that can have a really limiting definition for somebody. But to talk about, is someone, you know, are you experiencing somebody who's grabbing you at home or pushing you or any kind of physical violence? To talk about, you know, how is your relationship? Do you feel respected? Is there any name calling going on? Do you feel free to leave the home during the day? Are you talking with family and friends? You know, to just kind of talk through what is it like at home? And by doing that, and also how, if it's not healthy at home, that can have a big impact on someone's health, to encourage someone to say, you know, I don't feel good at home. Something is not feeling right now. This program that we're working on, the Community Health Advocate Service Program, we're so grateful to the Longwood Foundation, the Welfare Foundation, Christiana Care, Highmark, the Cannon Foundation. These are people and corporations and foundations in Delaware who recognize the very strong connection between domestic violence and your health. And that if we're going to really address this, we need to address it from a public health perspective.
What about the family members or the friends? And they are aware of the problem. You know, the red flag shows up and they see it if the victim does not. How do you approach this without alienating the person or making them question, their friendship with you?
That's such a great question, Laura, because it's a really common scenario. And I had noted earlier that sometimes friends or family will be quick to say, well, just leave, just dump, just get out. And leaving might actually put the person in more danger. What we know is that immediate leaving can sometimes create some risk of stalking and even beyond that. And so the leaving has to be something that's planful. And so I think if you know someone, if you have a friend or a family member who is in an unhealthy or unsafe relationship, that what you want to do is share information with them in an open way to say, hey, this doesn't feel good. I'm really concerned for you. I know that there are supports throughout Delaware. Let's find them together and connect those persons to those supports.
It's really important to bring in a professional, isn't it?
I think especially someone who understands domestic violence, I think that's really, really critically important.
You can just say, come to my house, you know, bring the kids and come to my house. But then you're not ready for, one, the legal ramifications and the custody and, all of the things that have to be done. And also, it can be dangerous.
It can be dangerous. And that's why it needs to really be a planful type of exit, a plan that's saying, what is the immediate need? And then what are some of the long-term needs? I think also that it can be really scary when you're in this relationship, and the thought of leaving, especially if you have children or if you're financially caught, is such a huge decision. And sometimes it can take a while to get there. Some things have to be put into place. And so if you're a friend or family member, to always keep an open door, open heart to this, and to not think, oh, here we go again, we're going to talk about this relationship, I told you to leave that person. No. To just imagine this is going to take some time, and so I want to be supportive through this process.
You are shaking someone's entire life.
I know. And you know, we want to make sure that the plan is a safe plan. And to do that, we have to make sure that they're connected to a DV advocate, somebody who can assess the risk that this person will experience as they're exiting the relationship or they're making themselves and their children safe.
I mean, this can go as far as safe, secret housing that is provided. There are emergency shelters out there. There are plans that they can help someone make with documentation, maybe squirreling away some money, getting a phone that is not tied to them. There are all kinds of things that can be done through these partnerships that you have with these organizations.
That's exactly right. And the decision to leave and to go into shelter, especially if you have children, is a very significant decision. People can be afraid to do that. And that's why up in Newcastle County, we have this Domestic Violence Community Health Worker Project where you can meet directly with a DV advocate in a safe location to talk through what is going on in the home and what are some of the options for safety.
Now, let's get into, you alluded to this just briefly. Let's touch on it for 1 minute and then let's get into how we can get involved. Prevention. Is this something that is inevitable or can it be untaught to a child raised in an abusive household?
Domestic violence is absolutely not inevitable. It is something that can and should be prevented. And when we talk about prevention, we're talking not only about, you know, that particular family or community, but really structural issues that support this type of violence. I mean, this type of violence is anchored absolutely in sexism and how we view gender roles in society and expectations that we have around families and gender roles. And it's really challenging those structural views and changing our understanding of gender roles and getting to the core of gender-based violence.
Now, I said let's just really quickly move on to something else. Advocacy work. You also alluded to how can the state, how can the government, and how can our agencies, et cetera, get involved in this and protect us?
We've got some great advocates down at Leghole, and they are working with our state legislators to make sure that when laws are presented, we're conscious of what will be the impact on victims, victims of any crime, but in particular victims of intimate partner violence. There is a bill currently, House Bill 215, that's going to be considered in this new year that would create victim confidentiality and advocate's privilege, where a victim who's talking with an advocate would have that sense of safety that that conversation is actually confidential. And that confidentiality is so critical for somebody seeking services.
Okay. Now, I know that throughout the year, it takes money to run all of this. Throughout the year, you have events. You have a big thing in October each year. How do we get involved? And what are you looking for from us?
I would like everyone in Delaware to become an individual member of the Delaware Coalition Against Domestic Violence. And you can go to the website and you can sign up and say, I want to be a member supporter. And you can donate $15 or you can donate more. Becoming a member is a way of saying, this issue is very important to me, and I want to be part of an organization and a group of people that are trying to do something about that. And we accept member donations as tiny as $10, $15, up to as much as you would like to give. We just celebrated this past October our 25th anniversary of the organization. We celebrated our founder, Carol Post, and the many, many advocates over the years who have really grown this coalition. And all the work, and we are thrilled by that as we're moving forward. Next October, October 1st, we're going to have our Purple Ribbon event, and we'll be advertising that on our website. Throughout the year, we offer training on domestic violence called Domestic Violence 101. We offer it in March, we offer it in September, and we're going to try and offer something in the summertime if you go to our website. So if you are in law enforcement, if you're a therapist, if you're an educator, if you're doing any kind of profession where, gosh, some of the people that you're working with are victims of domestic violence and you want to understand domestic violence better, you can sign up and come to this training. It's a 2-day training, but the information you get is incredibly empowering, especially if people that you're working with are victims of DV.
And of course, all of that is at your website, which is dcadv.org. And that is for Delaware Coalition Against Domestic Violence, dcadv.org, for how you can become a member, how you can find the information about where to go for partner programming, and of course, for how you can get involved if you are a law enforcement, therapist, educator, whatever. It's all there, dcadv.org. And I have to say thank you to its Executive Director, Sue Ryan. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Laura, so much.
Come back.
Will do.
Okay. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.